And we got shipped off to a whole other.
Oh, you guys have lost the other.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for August 23rd, 2016. The time right now is 7:03 p.m. Ms. Smith, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, Rasmussen, Davis, and Camp.
Thank you. And I received word earlier this evening that Councilmember Gamble would be late due to a work commitment. And I think we have everybody else here. Councilmember Cutaback, will you please lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. As presentation item number one, Snohomish Health District. Please come on the board.
I didn't even have to sit down from that for the pledge of allegiance. Thank you for your promptness. Okay. There we go. My name is Jeff Ketchel. I'm the Environmental Health Director of the Snohomish Health District, and thank you for having us here tonight. We have a group of my colleagues here with us, Pete Mayer, our Deputy Director, Chief Operating Officer in the back, Kevin Plemmel, our Environmental Health Operations Manager, Amanda Zitch, she's our senior staff for our school environmental health program, and Terry Smith, our human resource manager. So, they just wanted to come see me tap dance tonight.
Nice.
So I've been working in public health about 22 years, and I've been with the Snohomish Health District about a year. And before that, I worked for the Grant County Health District in Central Washington, where I was the director. And we were doing a project in the town of Ephrata. There's about 7,000 people in the county seat. And it's called Safe Routes to School. And Safe Routes to School, we try to get more kids to walk and bike to school. And just like when we were kids. And somehow kids got away from that. And it's a great way to get exercise and to minimize traffic accidents and things like that. But before you institute a Safe Routes to School program, you do something called a walking audit. And in a walking audit, volunteers walk around the neighborhood and say, well, there's a crack where a kid could trip, or there's a, we need a new crosswalk here, or there's a vicious dog on the loose over here, and we all write these up and create these maps. So I was doing this walking audit, working with a city administrator, a guy named Wes Crago. And after we got back from this walking audit, we were reconvening in the library to put all our information together. He says, Jeff, this is not the health district I'm used to. The health district I'm used to inspects restaurants and works in and gives flu vaccines. I said, well, we're a little bit different than we used to be because we've evolved into the 21st century and we have new problems that we're facing today. And so some of these new problems, just want to specifically address healthy people and healthy communities and healthy environments, and those are the three big areas that the Snohomish Health District is engaged in. So we go back about 100 years. Life expectancy in the United States is not too bad. And public health saw this as a problem. And our traditional process is you find the problem, you find the solution to that problem, and then you make sure that solution works. So public health went to work. And here are the list of the top 10 achievements of the 20th century for public health. And a lot of these will be very familiar to you. Things like vaccinations, safe food and water, motor vehicle laws, and workplace safety laws. And because of these great successes in the 20th century, life expectancy in America improved significantly, about 30 years for men and 30 years for women. And so now we move into the 21st century, and in the 21st century we're counting 21st century problems. So with the Safe Routes to School, I mentioned childhood obesity, but emerging diseases, the disease of the day is of course Zika. Before that it was Ebola. Before that it was MERS, or Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, and back and back and back. In fact, I remember in high school when HIV first came out, and it's just been a series of different diseases. And as we're becoming more of a global community, one of the stories I heard when I first got to Snohomish County was one of the first possible cases of Ebola was in Washington State, was a Snohomish County resident, and they were on a plane flying to CPAC. And so the Washington State Patrol came and picked up our health officer, Dr. Gary Goldblum, at the office in Everett, and had to get him down to CTAC to evaluate the individual. Well, they got him down there in about 20 minutes. Everett to CTAC in 20 minutes. It's almost about as fast as my wife drives. But, And some of the other issues going on here, the social determinants of health. And so in looking beyond, of course, restaurant inspections and flu vaccines, I was working in the town of Quincy, which is also about 7,000 people in central Washington. And they had a lot of public safety issues going on. They had a great economy, data centers, things like that going on, but they had these public safety issues, gangs and such. And so public health is really good at collecting data and doing assessment, trying to find the problem. And so we worked with them to do that. And so we did a public safety assessment for the city of Quincy. And in doing so, something very interesting came out of that assessment. And the assessment involved a community questionnaire, some focus groups, going out and getting different pieces of data from different sources. And what we found out was the city of Quincy had a truancy problem. And that because kids were skipping school, and there were no consequences for skipping school, they were going out and committing property crimes, tagging, graffiti, joining gangs, dropping out of school, low educational attainment, and so forth and so on. And so we got with the city and the school district to say, how can we address this problem together? It's a very upstream problem. And so the city agreed to hire two police officers to work in the Quincy High School to institute what's called the GREAT program, which is an evidence-based program to prevent high-risk kids from dropping out and joining gangs. And so we got very, very specific, and that's how that problem got addressed. And now we have a problem here in Snohomish County with opioids and heroin. So while we have 10% of the state's population, we have 20% of the state's heroin deaths. And so the Snohomish Health District is coming after this issue too. And the one I want to focus on is this one in the middle with the secure medicine return. So since 2010, the health district, in partnership with police departments and the sheriff's office in Snohomish County, have been collecting unwanted medicines. And one of the biggest reasons people end up getting addicted to opioids and sometimes eventually to heroin is their easy access to these painkillers. And sometimes they get them stealing from their parents or friends' medicine cabinets. I remember my wife and I have three children, and every time she had a baby and was discharged from the hospital, they gave her a big fat bottle of Vicodin. My wife's not a big fan of painkillers. She might take half of one, and then she wants to get rid of the rest of the bottle. We don't want to flush it down the toilet. We don't want to throw it in our trash. Secure medicine terms are really the best way to do that. But it was costing police departments and sheriff's office and the health district a considerable amount of money. A considerable amount of money to manage the end of life of the pharmaceutical industry's product. And so just this year, our Board of Health, with Councilman Rasmussen on it, thank you, unanimously passed a pharmaceutical product stewardship law that will require the pharmaceutical industry to fund and operate this HAVAC system. We were the eighth jurisdiction in the country to do so. And so we are taking tremendous strides and tremendous leadership in attacking this issue. But again, a lot more needs to be done. And so as I talk tonight about some of the financial issues happening at the ongoing issues happening at the health district, this is the opioid epidemic is one we want to expand more into. More involving with syringe and needle cleanups, sort of on that first line response, naloxone, but also the middle and long range, preventing people from getting addicted in the first place. Working with young mothers in high-risk families, making sure those kids are having the best, most healthiest starts possible, so they're less likely to end up with the poor choices down the road. And the research really supports that work. So what's going on in the Snohomish Health District? So we've seen a 22% decrease in funding since 2005, 34% reduction in workforce since 2008, and of the 35 local health jurisdictions in Washington State, we are 34th out of 35 in per capita funding. And the national average is about 40. So we're very much near bottom in that regard. So even though we're working with a reduced staff at the moment, we're having to use our reserves to maintain current operations. And at the rate of current expense, we'll soon be dipping below our reserves capacity. So where does our money come from? So the health district does not have taxing authority. We are a special purpose district that does not have that ability. So we get money from a lot of different places. Federal government through competitive and non-competitive grants, state through some flexible dollars, and as well as some grants and contracts for specific services. The county And then what I'm most involved in is permits and fees. So over the course of the years, the blue line is the revenue and the green line are the expenses. We've always been good stewards of the money, keeping it tight with between the revenues and expenses and not drifting too far from one direction or the other. However, if you see the directions we're heading now, that vertical line represents today, the path that we're on now, things are starting to separate a bit, and it's going to be harder for us to continue to deliver that level of services. So how can we help one another out? So we really like to do more with regards to heroin and opioids, as I mentioned. We also are working hard on nuisance and problem properties. We just had a series of interns. I just have a few copies here to share. We had a series of interns with us over the summer, and this is one of our interns' projects. And what it is, a pictography of some of the nuisance properties that we're working on and have, and some have achieved success, and some we're currently working on it. But it really reflects the level of body of work currently going on in this regard. One of the other things we're working on specifically here in Monroe, a couple issues at schools, and I want to briefly update the City Council on that. First of all, we had an E. coli outbreak at Monroe Montessori, and we pulled about 10 or 15 staff offline for about 2 weeks to focus right on that issue. In fact, I got to spend a Saturday morning at the school directly observing all the cleaning and sanitizing work that was going on there, so I got to be involved. And Amanda spent a lot of time out there too. We were really concerned. There were two kids out there with a very dangerous form of E. coli, and we wanted to make sure that it spread to any of the children. And so the school responded excellently. They responded with everything they needed to do, and we did not see any more additional cases. And so that was a really, really big response. And then we're also working quite a bit with Sky Valley Education Center and some of the issues around air quality and PCBs. And Amanda was just out there today. She's going out there every 2 weeks over the summer to make sure they're on track with their work plan, and they'll be ready to be open to school on time. And we're having tremendous levels of communication, not only with the school district, but also with different parents and teachers groups as well. And that's been a major body of work in 2016 for the health district. But we're on track with that as well. So how can Monroe partner with us continue some of this good work and to expand more? So per capita investments would definitely ease that downward trend that we're heading towards. However, I want to say positively that the cities of Snohomish County are not the only place we're asking for funding. We're also working with the county, and we're also been working on a very comprehensive ask at the state level, one that we've been working on for the past 3 or 4 years. And so, in understanding that public health is a shared responsibility, and that ARC that you saw on the previous slide did not include any sort of state investment, because the state has cut us significantly over the past few years, we'll be able to flatten that line and not only continue the great work that we do, but also add the additional work that's needed here in the 21st century. That is my presentation. Have you happy to answer any questions? And I'll also be here for the entire meeting if you want to chat with me after the meeting as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Council members, questions, comments? Councilmember Rasmussen.
So, Jeff, first of all, you know, thank you for coming and speaking to our council. I know I've addressed many of the points that we've talked about at the health board meeting, and many of the questions I've sent your guys' way. Pete, thank you very much for responses. I know it's required a little bit of energy and some work on finding those, and I really, really do appreciate it. So, the one big question I have after seeing this presentation a couple times and, you know, being able to have a chance to talk to others is The 24% that the district gets from state and federal grants.
Yes.
The one message that we've heard here from our lobbyists and others that are very familiar with the state budget is that funding from the state is going to be very difficult in the next session. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that and I see 24% of the health district's budget coming from that area, certainly it draws some concerns. So can you kind of speak to that as far as a plan on, I'm assuming there's concern from the health district side of that as well, but, how we hope to...
Sure. So some of the federal grants that local public health receives in Washington State and around the nation are exceptionally stable and non-competitive. So one has to do with emergency preparedness. One has to do with maternal child health. And those are the two big ones that we get. And then on the state level, some of this has to do with youth tobacco. We get funding from that was a competitive process. Marijuana. We get some funding for marijuana prevention there from the state. And then, but the dollars that I'd say are the most precious to us, because those are very categorical, they only use for certain things, is money that's flexible and used for the things that are essential or foundational to our work. Those are the types of dollars that we use to keep the lights on. So we use for communicable disease prevention and response, or TB. And it's those dollars that have really gone up and down significantly over the years, which is why we're going to the state and wanting some more stability for that. And the other thing is they've cut us already so deeply that to cut us even more would probably make very little difference in any of the state's budgetary problems. So right now, on a state level basis, local public health departments get $36 million a year total from the state for flexible dollars. So for 7 million people. So.
District staff and our council, the thing I'll add to this conversation, if I may, is, you mentioned Sky Valley Ed and Monroe Montessori. Mm-hmm. For us, that hits pretty close to home.
Yes.
Given one's right next door and one's just right down the street. And we've talked about both cases here in times past, and the thing I look back on and I think that what made those two such a positive success is the great partnership between the health district and the schools and the staffs and the parents. So if it wasn't for willing and able bodies on both sides of the fence,
yes,
none of this would be as much of a success. And I think as we hear the request for the $2 per capita funding and, put the amount aside and just, realize that to have a healthy community, it requires partnerships.
Yes.
And I think partnership with the health district is definitely one avenue, and how that looks like, certainly that's what I hope to, as council, will continue to discuss. And if it means... funding as being proposed, and keep in mind the board hasn't completely gone out and said that this is the way we're going to do it. We're still looking at other avenues and trying to come up with other ideas, because many cities are having the same conversations we are.
Right.
But bottom line is, I think we have that great partnership with our local health districts, and it's that great partnership that's going to make our communities a healthier place to live, work, and play.
And to follow up on that, the Montessori school was, our response was 100% funded by flexible dollars, and our work at Sky Valley was mostly funded by flexible dollars. So it's the flexible dollars that allow us to respond to the things that are going on in our community. So the categorical monies we get from the state, from the feds, as I'm sure you're well, are so very specific as to the state's interest and the feds' interest that we don't have very much control over how we use them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Just a question. You said since 2005 there's been a 22% decrease in funding. Can you tell me, is that across the board, or were there specific funding sources?
Some very, very, very specific things happened. We've received a number of cuts from the state with regards to our flexible dollars. That was a big chunk. Some of our grants went away. During the recession, our environmental health revenue went down substantially because the building industry tanked. Mm-hmm. But that's now recovering back. Anybody else want to throw in? can I get a lifeline?
You can.
With categorical funding, grants, and contracts that we have in flow, very unpredictable, very volatile. So that significantly impacts on our operations.
Yeah. And so some of the county dollars have gone down too, which is why we're going to the county with this same ask. Meanwhile, as money stays flat or reduced, of course, the population goes up.
Right.
And new problems occur, like Ebola or heroin.
Sure.
And so we have to mount up. One thing that makes public health, I've been in public health for 22 years and I really enjoy it, is the work we do. While we do services and we perform these outputs, we're really outcome-based. So no matter what's going on in Monroe or Snohomish County that's making people ill, injured, or prematurely dead, that's what we're working on. It doesn't matter if we have a category, if we have a funding source for it or not, we have to respond. And so when you have flexible dollars, like money we get from the county or money we may get from the cities, that's what we do. So in my previous job in Grant County, nearly every city did provide $2 per capita. And it was a great, great relationship. And I came before the city council like this on an annual or more basis to kind of say, here's what's been going on in your community. And in 1 year, the town of Soap Lakes had a whooping cough outbreak. And we're able to really use those resources and really focus in on that town. And the neighboring communities were happy because we contained it and we stopped it. It didn't drift over into their communities. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question on this, because, I mean, this looks pretty pitiful that we're 34th out of 35, and are we the fourth largest county or somewhere?
Third. So that's just pure per capita.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So in these other areas, counties, do most of them have cities that contribute?
So in Grant County, yes. I was working in a very unique scenario. Seattle, King County, Tacoma, Pierce have some very specific relationships,
mm-hmm.
But it's mostly categorical between Seattle, Tacoma, and those health departments, and Asotin County. Yeah, Asotin.
Just because, so when I look at the revenues and expenses, they're not keeping a pace, obviously, so you've had to lay off staff. And coming and asking the cities to contribute, it sounds like that's going to help a little bit with your structural deficit. But on one slide, you list that you're able to maybe provide more services to Monroe if we do this $2 per resident. So
it's like a balancing act. Provide those specific services that our city are interested in. Every city is different. And just like I did in Grant County, Moses Lake wanted some specific things, and I delivered them, and Fredo wanted some specific things. So it's about tailoring. It's like listening to your agenda and looking at your city council agenda tonight. There are things on there that are very public health related.
Right.
Whether it's transportation or utilities or what have you.
So if the city contributes, are those dollars used towards this city, or are those dollars used for the common bucket of public health across the county?
You would see specific services and hopefully outcomes
added on to our location. Okay.
Yes.
Because
so
it would seem like some cities, if they choose to contribute and others don't, you know, there might be an imbalance of, you know, if there's a whooping cough epidemic that goes across cities, which it probably would in our county, you know, you're going to have some paying more than others.
Right. There's some things, as Jeff noted, that Pete Mayer, Deputy Director for the Health
District. Thank you for the opportunity. There are very, obviously, some things that public health is obligated and would respond to countywide, regardless of whether a particular community was contributing the $2 per capita. How we're really framing this is some real focused services that we can provide to the communities that really meet their needs, as Jeff said, that are very tailored towards your needs. And find that right balancing act between meeting those needs in your community versus meeting maybe some different needs in another community. Now, with this request, we're also asking for the county to fully contribute to $2 per capita. And the notion there is that with this collective set of resources that we would obtain, that you would invest as in the county, we would provide some county-wide support for things that are really universal across the county, but really provide some additional capacity to us. The city's contribution really helps us then tailor some very specific things that are unique to Monroe that may be very different than to the city of Everett.
Sure.
So that's how we're trying to kind of capturing this of some things that are much that are very universal across the county, and then some things that are very specific to the cities. And so the city support would help provide resources here to focus on, for instance, nuisance properties, or on help working with the school district on adverse childhood experiences, and really helping develop that curriculum and building up resiliency in the youth of Monroe.
And where do you come up with that list of specific things that you're going to help to Monroe? Because is that a collaboration? Is it in discussion with the city? Because this is listed in...
Those were just some ideas to get you thinking
that
we've heard from other communities and just from our own professional, you know, our staff in working in these communities. But that's very much a conversation that we would like to have. That's part of that relationship that Jeff noted that we want to build with each community. Really subject to what would be the best investment of time and skill and resources of folks coming to your community. And that's an open discussion. And we would envision that being embodied in such like an interlocal agreement where it would identify kind of the deliverables or the outcomes that you would desire. We could revisit that annually to make sure it's meeting your needs. So something of that nature.
Okay.
And also think about that assessment process we go to. I mean, we have some really crackerjack epidemiology staff back at our agency. They can really take the data, go get new data, and really help define the problem for you.
Yeah. Well, I do appreciate everything you do, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming this evening. I've enjoyed your presentation. First, I want to thank you for the... I'm a Sky Valley Education parent, so I've received the emails with updates on the work that you're doing, and so I really appreciate that, everything that's going on with that. I think it's great for us to help you out. A couple of questions I had was on this chart, the other charts all show up through this year and beyond, and this only goes to 2013. Do you have an updated chart or for the heroin epidemic in Snohomish County? Or was it just that's the only dates that you've done?
Was that this heroin report?
Yeah,
that was available data at the time the report came out.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're working on it.
And we will work to refresh that as we are able to access additional data. We do have a number of additional reports coming out on marijuana.
Healthy housing.
We'll be updating our community health assessment that we completed just a year and a half, 2 years ago. So we've got some more data coming in report format that will benefit each of the communities too, that really help you better understand kind of what's happening.
Okay. I remember Mayor, it might have been your first year of service when we had Snohomish County Cities dinner at the slaughterhouse?
Yes.
And that's when I first heard about the doom and gloom from someone from your organization.
Dr. Goldbaum.
Yeah. That had brought kind of a prediction of where we're at. So this is nothing new, at least as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much for coming this evening. I do have a couple questions. So I'm understanding then from the graphs that we're looking at, like on the slide that shows revenues versus expenditures, slide 13, page 7, you're illustrating how the revenues and expenditures are different. You're illustrating how the expenditures are climbing relative to the revenues in 2016, for example. You mention on the other slide, 16, funding a shared responsibility under city, identifying additional things that you would do, and you foresee doing that through an ILA? Okay, and so one of the things I want to understand is that it would appear that your existing expenditures for your existing services are outstripping your existing revenues. And if I understood you correctly, for the roughly $35,000 that you're asking for from us, that's for new services. So I'm trying to understand how the existing expenditure line, what the nexus is between the existing expenditure line and what sounds like new expenditures, new scope of work that you'd be taking on. Would our $35,000 or so investment really close the gap, or would it just add new expenditures with new revenue and you'd still have the issue of the expenditure gap?
Well, I can start. You can start.
Sure.
Okay. So, it's a matter of, it's really a balancing act. So there, yes, there would be new services. There would be expansion of existing services. So we already have the staff with the expertise. Like with the nuisance properties, we're a member of the Sheriff's Gang and Drug Task Force. And so how can we bring some of those levels of expertise, how we work with social workers and code enforcement and law enforcement to really collectively attack these problems, not only in the county, but in all the cities, like you saw. How can we emphasize and focus and expand that body of work? I'm a big proponent of the broken windows theory, that if we're really going to attack this problem, that we can start attacking these specific little areas. And then it's a matter of how then we also focus our existing services and prioritize the things that we've identified within the cities.
Okay. When I look at the chart on page 15, slide 15 on page 8, I'm understanding that the impact of per capita investments in 2016 would essentially match your expenditures to your revenues. Is that correct?
So essentially, the effect of the per capita contribution would help sustain our capabilities while also providing some additional targeted services to the communities for really a couple more years than we would be able to do otherwise. So the per capita really has an opportunity to really help us keep the doors open, if you will, for two additional years based on a current trajectory of spending based on the programs and services the health district provides. Now the board may make some other decisions in terms of programs and services, reducing or eliminating those that obviously would change kind of the assumptions built into this projection. But this is based on continuance of the current programs and services of the health district, as well as this making these modest investments to provide the additional services in the community, in the specific communities.
So if we were to enter into an ILA with you at $2 per capita to help us focus on the opiate problem and nuisance properties, if we were to enter into an ILA with you for the $35,000, you'd still need another $35,000 on top of that to close the gap. Is that what I'm understanding? Because maybe I'm just not understanding the 2016 here. That assumes that all the cities pay an extra $2 per capita for the existing services, not for new services.
So the graph on slide 15.
Mm-hmm.
Would presumes some modest investment for the communities, as we talked about. And the green line is based on every community contributing towards those services. So what is factored into this is some additional positions, but also some reallocation of existing services to maintain what we currently have to be able to pull this together. It's a real, as I've said, it's a real balancing act of trying to not, as you point out, increase in expenses and having matching that with revenue and still not getting ahead.
That's the balancing act, and that's partly the conversation we're having with the county as well in terms of their contribution, seeing the countywide benefit of making this investment. So it's a tricky balance to find. One thing I should note too that we didn't cover here is we do not have any kind of fund for equipment replacement, such as vehicles, changing up, you know, our 50 or so fleet of vehicles, making repairs and improvements to a building that we own, or making sizable IT and software investments. That all comes off of the bottom line. There's no depreciation fund set aside for those. And for instance, we have nearly a $4 million repair and improvement cost to our building that that we reside in. $1.5 million of that is replacing needed HVAC. That comes out of our operating line. That's bottom line, and that's why we're already dipping into fund balance just to maintain operations this year. So this is a real balancing act of trying to find a way that it meets your needs, that we can help sustain and push that curve out a little bit farther and finding that right sweet spot.
Okay, thank you. On slide 13, you're showing, if I'm understanding the revenue line and the expenditure line, that's your entire health district altogether.
Yep.
So that includes your licenses and permits, which are driven by the economy. So as the economy drops, your expenditures drop and your revenues drop.
Staffing drops.
Okay. And do you have full cost recovery for your... So you're charging the cost, or?
In many programs we are, in some programs we do not. We're just onlining a new data management system, and a year from now we will be taking the data from the new system and analyzing fee structures to make sure that the fees are appropriate for the level of services required to deliver them.
I think it'd be helpful to understand in understanding what the city's commitment could be to see if it makes sense to subtract out the things that are license and permit driven, you know, economy driven versus the things that you were talking about here, like enforcement and the opiate epidemic. They're very different creatures, and I know some jurisdictions, other forms of government will have a separate fund, if you will, that is related to growth and development. Like that, it doesn't intermingle with those other services that you don't have any real cost recovery. You're just doing a public good, you know, public welfare, taking care of opiates and things like that, versus issuing somebody a septic permit or that kind of thing. I'm not completely familiar with what your permits and licenses are, but I think it would be helpful for me to understand sort of what we would call our general fund, you know, our police, our parks and everything, versus our community development, which if we had a separate account for that, understanding that sort of background, because as I look at this graph, there's a huge spike in 2006, and I'm sitting here wondering what that is, but when you start factoring in that's the buildup to what became the housing bubble burst, it begins to make some sense. And I'd like to see the interplay with all those other revenue sources and all those other expenditures subtracting out for that. I think it gives us a clearer picture of some of the things, to me, of some of the things that you are looking at doing.
And I think it's important to note too. So this is for all revenue. This is for the entire district. So also these spikes relate to H1N1, where we had a tremendous influx of vaccine, which we show on our books, and an expense where we mobilize clinics out in the community. So there's a number of emergency response kinds of items that are associated with this that are unique in nature. That's why you see some of these spikes. But to your point. Particularly environmental health, much of what they do is supported by fee, something that they can actually charge a fee for in exchange for a permit or a review or on-site inspection. So there are some exceptions to that. I don't want to steal his thunder because this is the expert on environmental health. But things around education, enforcement, compliance, complaints, that those are areas where we don't have a lot of fee recovery opportunity.
Yeah. One example is septic system repairs. So our history is if you charge the actual cost for what a septic system repair is, people are more likely to bootleg in a repair. And that serves nobody. So those permit fees are kept artificially low because we'd rather make sure they're done legally and properly and safely. So that's And then and sometimes temporary food is another one, like the fairs and the festivals. If we charge the actual cost that it costs us to inspect all these things, it'd be too high for, you know, your sister to go out there and sell lemonade and popcorn at the town festival. And so it's a matter of how can we balance the needs of the community with public health and safety and balance things out.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate everything you do for us here in the county and in the cities here. And thank you again.
Thank you. I guess I'll be here until the end of the meeting, so if you want to chat more, I'll be happy to.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item, which grab the mouse. Next item on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. The first person that I have who has signed up to speak is Ms. Rosie Tatel. Ms. Tatel. Yes. You're number one.
My name is Rosie Tatel. My address is 149-69-174th Avenue, Monroe. Now, first I want to show this map so you have an idea of where I mean. It's near the hospital, and it's really going to show if a police officer looks during the fair time, because this is a thing I hit all the time, but you're going to really see it. What happened is there's a medical building here, a small one, I think it's like nursing home type, and they wanted a crosswalk there. So when they put the crosswalk, they closed in the lift that I usually use. So now, if I want to go down in a, like, you know, I don't know if it's the right word, where it goes down.
Can I hold that over here for you?
Thank you very much, Councilman.
When they made that, they closed the one that I use for the bicycle. So to go down, I either have to go 60 feet one way or 30 feet another way. I measured it. And when I go that way, I have to go into the road if I want to use that down. Now, there's also a stop sign that people don't always pay attention to, and there's bushes that cause trouble. Now, you might wonder why I don't cross the other way when I'm going over the railroad tracks towards Highway 2. Well, at the next thing, where you see the pink thing on the hospital side at the bus stop, there's a sign, sidewalk ends ahead, cross at the street because the railroad tracks. And now, I know that's a high condition, the DOT and that, but if that lift could be put back in, that they cut, in other words, they filled it in, that would be much easier. And you're going to notice people go between cars with baby carriages, whatever. I've seen all different things I've observed last year.
Okay.
And with the fair coming, if you guys could really, I don't know if it's current markings I've seen there again, or if those are just ones that haven't disappeared, if they're going to cut something there, or I just haven't noticed that it's from when they did the sidewalk.
Okay.
It's like four different things. So if you guys could really observe that area, I'd appreciate it and maybe change it. Because to make it better for that one medical building, you've made it more dangerous for everyone in the finance who uses that area. And I'm going to leave that map with you guys, so if you want. And James Garner, who I haven't had a meeting with, if he could see that, I'd appreciate it.
Yep.
And if someone could go out there while the fair, because when people park to avoid the parking fee, that's when we get all the people walking there and using it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Tatel, I'm sorry. Somebody on staff will take a look at it and be back to you with any new information that we can offer. The city has applied for a CDBG. We've applied for funds for crossing that side of the railroad track, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So we are trying to improve the crossing there.
Now, I understand the other with the railroad tracks and that's a pain, but if they can just cut that lip again,
okay,
then it would be much easier, and you're going to observe it a lot. And my phone doesn't always leave messages. It appears, so if I don't get back to you in a day or two, email and work better. I never thought I'd say that. My husband will show me the email.
Could you leave your contact information with Mr. Feilberg, please? Perfect.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Rosie.
When did you come in?
2 minutes ago.
2 minutes ago. Okay. Thank you. Please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble entered chambers at about 7:43 p.m. Welcome. Okay. Next up, next person that we have who signed up to speak is And I'm really sorry if I don't get your name right. Patricia? Is it?
You're so Lottingslayer.
Lottingslayer? Oh, good.
All right. My name is Patricia Lottingslayer, 16886 Wales Street in Monroe. Good evening. We meet again. I was here a couple years ago. Here I am again. Back in front of you with a deep concern about the Wake Forest Park proposal in Lake Tye. It's the same one that a few years later hasn't been realized. Evidently, H3O has not been able to go forward. I think I missed the meeting where they were 2 years behind in their rent, and somehow the council decided to let them pay a bulk sum and go forward, which, as somebody who helps run a business, I find it a little confusing. I understand they haven't paid their rent since January. So I'm wondering, how long, as stewards of our community, do you expect this should go on? You know, as a member of the Freelance, I think it's time to stop. I understand that they're stating that there is a larger wakeboard company that wants to finance them. And if I have the name right, I don't know if you're familiar or if you tell me, I think it's Action Wakeboard Park, right? A-K-T-I-O-N. So Action is a wakeboard park that has large wakeboard park in Florida, Miami, Orlando, and they started one in Michigan. I'm going to be quick because I'm running out of time. They're huge. I mean, they're multi-sports complex, which sounds like it would be really great for our city. I don't think it would be. Up in Michigan, they have started another huge multiplex, multiple ski tow. So they're not interested in one ski wakeboard park. They're interested in multiple ski parks, so you can have 2-4 people going down the lake at one time. Other parks would be a large portion of the lakes. They closed down one ski or wakeboard parks in Akron. They closed it in Allentown. They closed it down so that they can open up a larger one miles away, and I don't think it's open. The point I'm making is if they say that they're going to be a financial sponsor or financial backer, that's not how Akron, which is a subsidiary of Ski Nautique, works. They buy you out, they take it over. So are they going to honor the contract that we have with H3O, or is it going to be complex? Are they going to be making lots more money for themselves? I don't think our park's even big enough for what they have proposed. So if they come in, it's not financially viable, it's not part of H3O's contract, they'll shut it down. They'll move somewhere else. It's a huge business. It's a privately held company. It's held by Craft, I think, which is Ski Nautique, which is huge. Are they here just to sell boats? They shut down, they move away. So, okay. I think we can do it on our own. Let's go forward with paddle boards and kayaks and fishing and swimming and triathlons. Our adventure does start here. It starts. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Ms. Sellers. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Ashley Sellers, 20930 East Rosemont Drive. I just want to start by saying I am neither for or against H3 or the water park. I've seen it in Copenhagen. It's a pretty cool thing. I grew up in the 40s, so that's pretty cool back when I was young. What I am against, though, is bad business. And this is bad business, like, to the T. If any of you hired a contractor to come to your house and work on it, and 4 years later it still wasn't done, and then on the day that they were going to get there or ask you for an extension, they waited till 7 o'clock at night, not even business hours, and then you look good if you want to have someone meet with you. I'm sorry, I have come to your meetings for a long time now. I have seen these guys be rude to council members. I've seen them approach you with a nonchalant, "It is what it is, we're bankrupt, so you can imply those fees, but you're not going to get anything anyway." That's not the way that business should run, and that is not a company that this city should want to do business with. So, on August 31st of last year, almost a year ago today, I just want to reassure the city that we have raised funds for a phased approach, Dick said. If this phased approach is approved, we're ready to break ground and start with the project. That is what they stood here in front of you and told you, which at this point is a lie to your face. This is a project that if it was done by the right business, could actually be great for Monroe. It could. It could give our kids activities, like the skate park is full of kids, which is awesome. But that is not what we're seeing here. I've heard council members say, well, we haven't had anybody else come up to want to use the lake, so what does it hurt us to just leave it in this crappy contract? What hurts is that people don't want to do business with people that don't handle business very well. What hurts is if they know there's a contract and the city keeps letting it go and letting it go, why are they going to approach you? It doesn't welcome somebody else to offer an opportunity idea for Lake Tide. So at this point, I really encourage you guys to realize that this was just a bad deal. If Action is interested in opening a wakeboard park, awesome. They don't need H3O's contract with you. Let them approach you. Let them have contract ideas. Let them present something to you. So that's it on H3O. On to the next one, beating a dead horse. Growth Management Hearing Board. I understand you guys are going to vote to, or there's ideas of talking about asking the Growth Management Hearing Board to extend their deadline. I really encourage you not to do this. This is taxing on the city. It's taxing on the people of the city that have been fighting this for a very long time. And more than that, if the Growth Management Hearing Board keeps their order and you come into compliance with not an emergency ordinance, but actually change it back to limited open space, it doesn't stop any of the legal precedents that is happening. It's not going to stop what's happening right now. Heritage Baptist is still going to have their opportunity to go to court. And if they win, then it'll come back here. And then you guys will have the backing to say this is the right thing to do. But so far, the only people that have said this is the right thing to do is this council, not Growth Management Hearing Board, not hearing examiners. That is not happening. 3 minutes in short. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come to speak to the City Council this evening on anything up at the podium? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Camp.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from, was that Councilmember Rasmussen, to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Before we move on to new business, we have need for an executive session. Do I have a citation for the executive session that I can read in?
RCW 4230110-1I.
Okay. And is that, what's the short title for that?
Pending litigation.
Okay. So we are going to go into executive session for how many minutes? For 10 minutes. There will be action to follow, of course, since we're doing this early in the agenda. So we're going to go ahead and move into executive session. We're going to stay in here for executive session. Thank you. Okay, we're back out of executive session. The next item on the agenda is new business. This is item number 1, AB16111, East Monroe GMHB compliance date extension request. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the subject again is the Growth Management Hearing Board compliance due date for East Monroe. As you all know, back in April of this year, the Growth Management Hearing Board issued a finding continuing noncompliance as it relates to East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and the contract from the rezone for East Monroe. And in issuing that order, the hearings board invalidated the two ordinances, the one adopting the Comprehensive Plan Amendment and the one adopting the zoning map amendment. Since that time, a couple of items have happened. One, on May 3rd, the City Council approved Ordinance 003-2016, in which the City Council reaffirmed that during this compliance remand period, that the zoning for the East Monroe properties would be limited open space. And the second item that's happened, or second major item that's happened, is that the applicant, the Heritage Baptist Church, filed a legal appeal of the Growth Management Hearing Board decision. That legal appeal bypassed Superior Court and was accepted for direct review by the Washington State Court of Appeals, but it's not clear at this moment in time how long it will take for the Court of Appeals to issue a decision. In the meantime, we're running up against the compliance due date that the Growth Management Hearing Board identified in its April 1 order. That compliance due date is September 28th of this year. And so an action by the City Council would be appropriate at this time. The requested action in the agenda bill is that the City Council authorize and direct the Mayor and City Council to request an extension of the compliance due date to the Growth Management Hearing Board for a period of up to 12 months. That the board be notified of the city's approval of ordinance 003-2016, in which case the city council reaffirmed the zoning designation of the East Monroe property's limited open space during this compliance period, and then also asked that the hearing board rescind its order of invalidity during this compliance period time as well. And so requested action is in the agenda bill, and it would allow for the mayor and the city attorney to take all necessary and appropriate measures related to that action. And that concludes the staff report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp?
Thank you. No question. But I move to authorize and direct the mayor and city attorney to request an extension of the Growth Management Hearings Board's September 28, 2016 compliance deadline in case number 14-30006C for a period of up to 12 months. Request that the GMHB rescind its order of invalidity, notify the board of the city's adoption of interim ordinance number 003/2016, which formally designates and reaffirms the East Monroe Area Limited Open Space LOS, and confirm that the LOS zoning designation remains in effect and governs the East Monroe area during the compliance remand period, and to take all necessary and appropriate measures related to this action.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Kemp and a second from Councilmember Davis. The motion is as written in Agenda Bill 16111, generally summarized as authorize and direct the mayor and city council to authorize and direct the mayor and city attorney to request an extension of the Growth Management Hearings Board's September 28, 2016 compliance deadline for up to 12 months. Request that the GMHB rescind its order of invalidity, notify the board of the city's adoption of the interim ordinance previously mentioned, and take all other necessary and appropriate measures related to this action. Again, that's as written in the requested action in Agenda Bill number 16-111. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Cuddeback?
I thought you were going to ignore me.
No, I was just checking in with our city clerk really quickly.
You
said that was good. Okay.
So I'm not going to vote for this motion for a couple reasons. First off, I think an extension is needed. Obviously, we're bumping up against the compliance deadline, September 28th. So I agree we need an extension to get there. I think that 12 months is not necessary. It's too long. I also think that nothing in this motion suggests that we are marching towards compliance, and I think we need to do that. It's time to give the public closure, so I will not be voting for this motion. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Nay.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Okay, so those voting against the motion are Councilmember Scarborough and Cuddeback. And motion passes 5-2. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is new business item number 2, AB 16-112, discussion transfer of property to the fire district. And is this Mr. Feilberg?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. As you may be aware, the citizens of this Monroe Fire District Number 3 voted on August 2nd to merge with Fire Protection District Number 7, kind of over the Malton Clearview area. Over the years, the fire department has gone through numerous governance models. It initially started out as the city fire department, which then provided service under contract with the fire district. Then we had a joint operating board, and then in 2006, the city annexed to the fire district. When that happened, there was an interlocal agreement entered into between the fire district and the city of Monroe that governed the annexation process, fire prevention activities, and the ownership of the property. That agreement did not have an assignment or succession clause, so that is just between District 3 and the City of Monroe. District 3 will cease to exist on October 1st, and so a new agreement is needed. Looked at just assigning the agreement to District 7, but staff thought that maybe it'd be time to kind of clean some things up, one of them being is the keeping the city ownership of that property. Since the city doesn't use it for anything but fire district or fire department purposes, now should be a good time to just transfer all that property to the fire district and get the city out of that. The main reason is that it kind of gives them control over what they do with their property. Right now, they have to get our permission to do things to their property and their buildings, and then it also removes a small cost possibility from the city that in case something does happen over there, even though the interlocal agreement says that we're indemnified from any lawsuits and things like that, even though since we do own the property, there would be some cost for us saying that we are not included in that. You know, this filing of motions for dismissal would cost money. So that's a small cost. It just eliminates that possibility of occurring. There would be no transfer of money. We just basically not gift because that's not allowed, but we transfer the property to them. And because they are still using it for fire protection purposes, it's not a gift. The city attorney currently is working on the agreement right now, so that's in the works. And we also have to have a public hearing, and it's scheduled for September 20th, so this will be coming back to you. The question before you this tonight is whether or not the city council agrees with the policy of transferring the property to the fire district. If so, we will continue with that process. If not, we will have the city attorney stop working on that agreement. The other thing we will do is with the current interlocal going away, we're also going to have another interlocal with the fire district for the continuation of the fire prevention and inspection services, which is necessary because the fire district does not have authority to do that. It is vested in the city by our adoption of the International Fire Code, and we currently do not have the appropriate staff to take on that function, so we will continue doing that with the fire district's help. And that's the presentation. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Sorry, we've got two more lights. I'm just getting them all together here. Councilmember Hanford.
So I think Councilman Rasmussen was first.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
The requested action, are you just looking for consensus or a motion?
Either way, consensus would be fine. If you'd like to make a motion, that'd be fine too.
We're just looking for direction on thoughts here, and the agreement will end up coming back to you regardless, but so there's an opportunity like a study session to discuss it.
Sure.
Ask the questions you have, give us some thoughts, direction, and we can bring it back, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm perfectly fine with moving forward in this, and everything you said makes complete sense, so I'm fine with that.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Ditto. The one question I had for the chief was, would there still be, I know one of the special things when we go to the fire department for activities is seeing the old Monroe Fire Department wagon and the pictures and the hats of the Monroe Pride. Will that be able to still pretty much remain?
Yes.
Okay.
We still want to keep our city's autonomy and
form
that. Chief Silva, can you come up to the lectern, please? Sorry. Thank you, sir.
That is correct. We still want to keep the history and the autonomy of our cities. It's like Seattle does with Ballard and Capitol Hill, where you have Mill Creek, Monroe, Clearview, Moby.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You can sit right there. Thank you, sir.
Welcome back.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford, did you have anything further?
No. Thank you.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Okay, Brad, I just had a couple of questions about the last paragraph. There's no cash exchange with the property transfer. The value received by the city will be the continued use of fire protection services and elimination of liability risk. So we're not getting any enhanced services.
No.
Right? Just what we've got now is what we're getting. And liability, just the property. What kind of liability? We're liable for fire department.
No, if something happened over there, even though the interlocal agreement says that they indemnify us from loss, just going through that process, would cost money for our attorney to go to court and say, you know, we're out of it because of this agreement.
Okay.
So that's just a minor cost, yeah.
We're just done with that part. And then in the future, the fire department, they finally get their flying saucer or whatever, and they're doing that for fire prevention. They sell the property, then we would get the compensation. We'd get the money, or we'd get all the money?
There would be, part of the agreement would be that some of that would come to us.
Okay, so that would be determined in whatever contract is put together.
Correct, yeah, and that would be brought back to you in the future. Yeah.
Okay. As other council members said, I'm perfectly fine with this. I think it's a good idea. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Well, I'm asking the same question.
Mm-hmm.
It's about money and value. We're talking about giving it in District 7 in a sense. What are we getting for it? Just the ability to use the building and no rent, and then if it sells, we get something back. Is something 10%, 20%, 50%, 75%? We have any idea what that is?
Well, first of all, what I'd like to say is that the city doesn't own it, the fire district doesn't own it, we're stewards of the taxpayer dollars. It's the taxpayers that own it. So, us being you, we're double taxing the same taxpayers. So, we're just a steward of their dollars and their facilities.
Because the people have already paid for it. When they issued bonds in 1991, and you know, their fire taxes or the city taxes paid those bonds off. And over the years, they paid that off. And so that it's already been paid for. And if we were to, if we were to sell it for money, you know, the fire district, they'd have to ask the same people to give us money for it. And they've already paid for it. So it is still being used for the same thing. They paid money to have a fire station to provide fire protection. They still have a fire station that provides fire protection. So we haven't worked out the terms of what the compensation would be if it ever sold, because they, you know, they went to drones or whatever to fight fires. And so, you know, we're thinking about along the lines of basically, you know, the percentage of contribution that happened sometime in the past.
So would the onus of maintenance fall on the city of Monroe or in the combined districts?
It's
fire.
All, yeah,
always been the
fire district.
Fire.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
I'm trying to remind myself, the conference room there, is that managed by the fire, or is that still booked through the city for, you know, the conference room at the fire station there, that a lot of, is that through the fire department?
Correct.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was done through. Okay. But there's no change.
So what I'm hearing then is consensus that, yes, let's have two separate agreements. One will be to have the fire prevention inspection services provided by the fire district for the city. The other agreement will transfer the city's ownership interest in the fire department real and personal property as it existed at the end of 2005 to the fire district. And so we will try to get these back to you the earlier, like September 13th?
Yeah, because I asked for the draft agreements to be done by the attorney at the end of this month.
Perfect.
We'll talk amongst ourselves and then have it for the 13th for the council.
Perfect, which means that you won't need to make a decision at the last minute before October 1st, but if necessary, we can bring it back to a subsequent meeting. We recognize that this is just to get an idea of scope, and we can then look at the details when it comes forward. Thank you very much. Thank you, Council. Next item on the agenda this evening is Councilmember reports. Would you like to go ahead and skip down to the staff department reports, propulsion cable park, and then we'll go back up to the councilmember reports. So, Mr. Brazel, we'll go to department reports number one, propulsion cable park general status update.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. On August 17th, H3O notified us via an email that they are interested in a contract extension. In that request, they mentioned that there could be another business entity that could potentially partner with that. I have not met with that particular company. It's called Action Water Sports or something like that, Action with a K. At this point in time, I've received no correspondence from Action other than their name is mentioned in the email.
Councilmember Hanford.
No questions, just a statement and a motion. I wanted to
From the beginning, I've been in favor of the cable park. I think that it was a great idea. I still think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, H3O just has not come through, and the way that they've conducted business has not been the way that I would have hoped by any means. We voted to extend several months ago with the groundbreaking deadline, with the being open deadline. And for me, that was my last chance for H3O because I felt like we, for almost 4 years now, we've given them time and time again opportunity to come through and actually open a park. And unfortunately, by missing with the date that we have coming up here, they're supposed to be open and operational by September 8th, and that's not going to happen. So it's very unfortunate, but maybe someday we can have something there. But so I'll make a motion.
Councilmember Hanford?
Yes.
Under our rules of procedure, I'm going to need you to make a motion to add an agenda item to the council meeting agenda.
Sure.
Redundancy there, sorry. Agenda. So it would be valuable for you to add, do you have a suggested motion?
Go for it.
Go ahead. I'll defer to the city.
I mean, it would be a motion to move item one from staff department reports up to new business, right?
Right, to take action.
To take action on it.
On the status of this contract.
I move to move item one under staff department reports to under the title new business for council to take action to the propulsion cable parks correspondence.
Second.
Yeah, the first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen, the effect of which would be to put this into the new business section of the agenda and provide an opportunity for council members to take action related to H3O's request for an extension. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor.
So, just to clarify, we're back into new business, so yes, we can finish.
Yes, you can make the motion if you choose to.
So pursuant to Section 2.07 of the Concessionaire and Property Use Agreement, I move that the City Council vote to deny the concessionaire's request for an extension of the rent commencement date deadline.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to deny the request for an extension. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you. Opposite of Councilmember Hanford, I've been on the opposite side of this as far as how I felt about it. It is unfortunate that it has come to this, taken this long. I think that our staff really needs to be recognized in this for all the work that they've done and has put a lot of time in it, a lot of effort, a lot of energy. And it's when you put that much work into something, that much effort into something, and not see it come through, regardless of how you feel about it, it can be challenging. So, to everyone that was involved with this, from city staff and mayor, I applaud you for all the work that was done. And H3O as well. They put a lot of work into this. Given that, certainly not how I would personally do do things on the business side, but you know, they nonetheless put a ton of work into it, and you know, I applaud them as well. Yeah, I was very involved with this from the very beginning, and I could actually remember sitting on the interviewing for Parks Board and being told, hey, this, something's coming up the line, and we'll fill you in later. And come to find out that this is what we're discussing. So, you know, I do agree that a cable park in Monroe is a good idea. I still maintain that a cable park at Lake Tai is not such a great idea. And I definitely agree that cable park with under the current business model that was proposed to us, definitely not a great idea. So it does bring me relief to be able to say that, you know, this chapter in our community will soon officially be over. But, you know, and if there is someone that is capable and willing and wants to do this, then, you know, certainly invite them to go through the process, and we'll explore it then. But I do look forward to moving on from this.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's very unfortunate. We have expended a lot of energy on this topic. I think the one thing that, and you know, those that don't know my personal journey, I've been on both sides of this, is I've researched this and actually traveled to Florida to look at a cable park and a whole nine yards. I was visiting my sister-in-law, but I did visit the cable park, so it wasn't a trip just to see the cable park. But I think the thing that I've learned the most over this, though, is that, and I mean, I absolutely support, you know, not extending, because, you know, the last time they were here was the last time for everybody, almost, you know, across the board. At least that's what it felt like. But the community, whether they were for it or against it, there was a general consensus that, hey, we want to do something with Lake Tai. You know, it's, you know, you had a large contingent that wanted a cable park or wanted that type of activity. But those that even were against it were like, no, we want docks, we want paddle boards, we want, you know, this or that. So there is a strong desire to better that park. And so, you know, basically what I would say with this is, as we, you know, we vote on this particular motion, and I'm assuming the outcome, but that we do keep the focus and, you know, pointed there, that we do something at Lake Tai. We've taken huge steps there with a lot of different... you know, the redesign of the skateboard park, as we talked about. You know, we were, you know, one of our legislative priorities is to get those fields turfed out there, and we're moving you know, forward to try to get that. We have an investment there. It is one of our shining gems. So, you know, whether it's going back to the Parks Board or whatever the case may be, I firmly think that what I don't want to happen is that we let this expire and then everybody just goes, you know, back home, right? And we don't. There was so many cries of, there's so many things we can do there. Well, hey, it's about to be the opportunity to do that. So I hope that we get a lot that come out on that. So anyway, that's it.
Yeah, sounds good. Anything further? Okay, let's go ahead and vote. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. We are going to go up to council member reports. We didn't have any committee meetings or outside meetings, so we'll just go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Gamble, you're up first.
I'm up first.
Yes, sir.
It's fair time. I'm looking forward to this week and to the parade on Saturday. It's also football time, as we all know. Parks are in great use, Mr. Farrell. I think it's the second year in a row that we've been utilizing Sky River, which was not something we've done or the league had done in the past, and they've done a great job. And they know how to spray paint a football field now, so that's good. It's been really
miniature.
What was that? Yeah, that was fun. Oh, that was funny. That was last year. But no, it's been great. The parks have worked out great, and they're filled every day, and then shared between the soccer and the football teams. And we're right around the corner. It's kickoff. It's fair this weekend and the following weekend. It's the first high school football game. I think Bearcat U started today for all the freshmen that wanted to get a jump start, so they're up there at the high school. Anyway, it's just an exciting time of year. Go Hawks!
Go Hawks! All right. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Nothing really to report. Wish everybody a happy Fair Days. Have a safe Fair Days. Don't eat too much.
it for me.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Just looking forward to the parade this weekend. I have another daughter will be driving for me this time, so I have to rotate them now, evidently.
Nice. Hey, can I get a show of hands? Who's going to be in the parade? Can we do something? Can we all get together and get a picture? Okay, I meant to do that last year because we had everybody last year too. And
are you going to say we have to wear pink?
I invite you all to wear pink because if people raise a certain amount of money, I'm going to be wearing a pink mohawk. Yes.
Now that
yes.
I'll
do. All right.
Special effects.
Anything further, Councilmember Davis?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Ditto on the fair coming up, the parade. Councilmember Cutterback, you missed it. We're getting banners with our names on it this year so that everyone knows that Patsy's got the coolest car in the parade. So
it stood out. Still talking about it a year later.
That is right.
Said something.
That is true. That is true.
I heard they've got a Yugo.
It's a convertible Yugo. They cut the top off.
So, looking forward to it. It's always huge for Monroe, the parade and the fair in general. And I know Deputy Chief Gennard puts a lot of strain on your officers. So, you know, please pass on my thanks to them and for the work that they continue to do. And, you know, being said, we're not going to meet for a while, just a reminder that school is about to start in a couple weeks. So, you know, we'll start seeing school buses and shuttle vans and kids walking to school. So please be safe out there. Watch out for them. Let them cross. Don't do otherwise. And see everyone on the 13th.
Sounds good. See you on Saturday.
Saturday.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, first of all, I need to apologize if it has felt like or seemed like I was falling asleep. I had a delicious dinner at Big Daddy John's before I came here, and I had that big blue ribbon burger that I was reading all about on Facebook, so I'm ready to go home. but no, I'm looking forward to the parade this weekend. It's going to be a good time. And everybody have a great Labor Day weekend. Safe travels if you're going out of town. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
I missed a couple weeks, but I just wanted to publicly say thanks to the Parks Department for the skateboard park. I was there at the grand opening. It's amazing. The park is being highly used, so it's a wonderful asset for our community. And looking forward to the fair, and let's see who has the best car.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I'll just ditto all the comments so we can get on with it.
What's going on with the staff, Mr. Worthen? Okay. Deputy Chief Gennard.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell, you almost became a council member.
This is it.
Whoa.
I'm just going to get it.
This is going to take a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to read it.
Oh, you know what? I'm just going to see.
Show the papers. I'm going to show your papers.
You know, while it's booting up, we can
forget.
Okay. While it's booting up, if it's easier to show up there, I can go on to the next department. We'll go ahead and do that.
Sure.
Because you'll be able to see it better up there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ms. Nelson. So no record. Mr. Osaki.
I'll buy Mike a little time. I mentioned, I think, a couple months ago that one of the potential grant sources for the downtown lighting was Foundation for Phoenix and Energy. The issue being that the application needed to be done through a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
And so we've been coordinating staff in different departments, have been coordinating, providing information to the Downtown Monroe Association. And these have actually submitted the application today.
Great.
Now, what I don't know, though, is that the deadline is October 1st. I'm not sure if submitting it earlier rather than later, closer to the deadline, means we'll get a response sooner rather than later. And I actually don't know when the actual announcement of the awards will be. I'll try to find that out. At least we have something in the door for a grant application for that. Speaking of downtown, Planning Commission met last night. They talked a little bit more about downtown code amendments. We talked a little bit about some potential amendments for our critical areas ordinance, which deals with streams and wetlands. And then one of our new planners has put together, and I mentioned this earlier, a map showing all the properties that are in play right now for plats throughout the entire city. The Planning Commission reviewed that map and gave some comments back and made some changes. And if we get those changes integrated into it, we'll share that with the city council.
Okay, sounds good. Council members, do you have any questions for any of the directors that have spoken so far? Okay. Chief, you're here. Do you have anything you'd like to share?
It's anticipated that both boards of fire commissioners from District 3 and 7 will sign the resolutions to final resolutions to merge the districts effective October.
And what's your district going to be?
Fire District 7.
Fire District 7, okay. I'll have to get used to saying Fire District 7. All right.
That was paying off the truck.
Thank you. Mr. Feinberg?
That's all for a amendment. Are you done?
I'll get there. Okay.
Nothing to report today.
Does anybody have any questions for our fire chief or Mr. Fowler? Okay, let's go for it.
All right, thank you. So this is a follow-up from last week, the tourism promotion banners, and
you got lacrosse on the
idea of compete here.
I like it.
And we have, what is that, ILI? What's that? Oh, lacrosse. And soccer. And baseball and football.
You put two lacrosse players on?
Boys and girls.
Well,
clearly the one, the second one to the left, that's girls.
Where's the softball?
I think it's a cricket.
Did the mayor get a hold of you on that?
No, I didn't.
No, it looks great. That's cool. I like it.
Looks good.
There's the full lineup here. Cool. Open up to bike here, open up to board here, open up to compete, to eat, explore, to fare, fish, fresh.
That was a combined one.
Music, race, ride, shops, stay, and try.
So question for you, Mike. Since we're probably not going to get these actually manufactured, probably for another 4 to 6 weeks, are we just going to wait to put them up until the springtime when the sports and outdoor season starts again? Because I know that we're going to want to go through and refresh the downtown to seasonal banners. Just curious, because we're coming near the end of the season, the sort of outdoorsy.
I don't know what everyone else thinks, but it's kind of a year-round thing with a lot of adventures and tourism promotion.
Okay.
But you're correct that the plan is to have the Light Up Monroe banners installed in November, through December for those 2 months.
Okay. Sounds good. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you for limiting there was two of them, or the word didn't even really fit on the...
Yeah.
It was so off. But yeah, I was...
Westran.
I was going to say the same thing. Some of those we want to keep up, pretty much year-round, except for that month of during Christmas or the holidays, so...
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Make anything else to report in the...
Well, other than just events, the farmer's market Wednesday, and then this Friday is movie Under the Moon, last one of the season, Star Wars is Force Awakens.
Ooh.
And everybody's talking about the parade.
And Mr. Farrell and I met with somebody from the Fishing Derby on Thursday. He talked to us a little bit about how the city used to give lodging tax dollars to help fund the fish out there. And at one point in time, some information got back to them where they decided not to apply for funds through the lodging tax, but had come to us looking for other funding sources, and Mike was very quick to come up with like two or three other potential funding sources. You want to talk a little bit about the meeting? It was a fairly short meeting, which was great because you had the information right there. So,
well, more the TPA grant program, which we
tourism promotion area,
awarded funding to promote tourism. So
the Sports Commission, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, as far as some support to make a strong application. So the travel event organization.
Sounds good. Okay, when we come on up here, land sales update. Mr. Bessel.
Real quickly, we still have an interested party in parcel 5. They sent in a draft LOI, but it was has some issues. I think I might have mentioned that before. And so Jane had reached back out to them today, had contacts, so hopefully in, for our next meeting I'll have something to bring forward.
Any questions on the land sales update? All right. Any other meetings you want to update on, like skip?
I attended the skip meeting this morning. The main topic, which was new to myself and some of the other members as well, but Snohomish County was there, and they've hired Pertit Engineering to work with them, and they're working on a project called Snohomish County East-West Corridor High Capacity Transit Access Study. And essentially what they're looking at is the overpasses in the areas between 128th and 164th. They're pretty narrow, they don't move a lot of traffic, and in order to move traffic better in the future and have transit buses crossing that, they're doing a study to look at expanding the size of those overpasses, in addition adding additional overpasses in between the two, potentially. And it's focused basically on South Snohomish County, that whole area over I-5. So it was discussed, we saw a overhead presentation, and they told me that they would be sending that to me in PDF in the next couple of days. So as soon as I get that, I'll forward it to council so you can see it, and I'm sure at some of your other meetings, Snohomish County will probably be there presenting it. But it's big dollars for these projects. You know, you're talking $200 million for some of the overpasses, up to $400 million. So it's a big proposal, but they feel it's doable. Over the next 20 years to knock some of these things out to plan for the future growth in those areas.
Yeah, and those are unincorporated areas, and I've just recognized that the cost of widening 522 is less, and we can accommodate growth here in a city as opposed to the county. So just an observation. Anything further? Okay, thank you. Just running down the road this week, as you can see, I reported out on the legislative priorities. Thank you all for voting on those. We got the letters off to all of our representatives at the county level, state level, federal level, and the Economic Alliance, so they've got our sheet. You can see that I updated everybody on the roundabout on West Main. That letter went off to our representatives on Friday or maybe yesterday. And so I'm hoping to get some movement on getting that cleaned up. A shout out thank you to the Monroe Monitor for the article on the city bird last week. So thank you. And then let's see what else. Did some maintenance out at Sky River Park. You can see that slide that it had been damaged after was replaced last week. Let me see. We and I think everybody saw that we were on Cairo about a week and a half ago about break-ins in people's cars. I think that happened after our meeting last week. Yeah. So we had recognized that a number of those cars that had been stolen from were unlocked. So just a reminder to everybody to please lock your doors on your cars. And I'll be meeting with PD this week to talk a little bit more about some of the things going on in town with crime and drug houses and homelessness and things like that. There was a pretty large Facebook thread. Deputy Chief, I'd like to meet on Thursday. You don't know that yet, but I'm sorry. This is first time he's hearing that. The point being is that there was quite the threat on there. The 0.2% sales tax that was before the voters would have brought in about $400,000 a year to the city. It was my hope that we would be able to hire an officer and find some way to address the homelessness, the drug abuse, and other issues here in town. And with that not passing, I'm going to ask the police department to come forward with some sort of strategy or proposal that we can put into the 2017 budget. So it is really difficult looking at the public when I see things on Facebook, when council members see things on Facebook. We can't interact the same way that an average citizen can. So I did see that some people had put up on Facebook that a reminder that council members can't interact on Facebook because of Open Public Meetings Act issues and creating a quorum, and also that I can't interact because even though I don't have a quorum issue, I have to maintain my public records, and I can't do that on somebody else's server. So, you know, looking back at Chris and other folks that are out there, just a simple reminder, if people have concerns about a policy in town, please email us. It's not that we're not engaged. It's just that we can't engage in social media the same way that other people can because of the laws that we have in this state that are there for transparency and for openness. So anyway, I'll be working with PD over the next couple of Thursdays and see what we can build into the budget and try to come forward with a package that helps address some of those concerns for 2017. They are real concerns. They need to be addressed, and we need a more holistic, better way to approach those. I think that's all I have for right now, so let's go ahead and go into the agenda for next week. I'm sorry, for the 13th.
Draft agenda for September 13th, 2016. Still tentative, but it's a confirmation of the Civil Service Commission appointment. We have the consent agenda. Under new business, we'll be looking at the garbage contract options. Tentative, there'll be discussion over development review and approval processes for streamlining our operations in that department. Under final action, it'll be amending MMC 5.03 emissions tax. It'll be a final reading. And then council member reports. Any additions or deletions?
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I should have a Board of Health report under council member reports on that day as well.
Thank you.
Long range agenda. Any additions or deletions? Are people going to be absent?
Councilmember Kent?
Thank you. I just noticed that there is no Snohomish County tomorrow this month. So there will be no report this month.
As a reminder, again, we have Snohomish County Cities in the latter half of September. We'll be hosting here in Monroe, and I would encourage everybody to be there. As before, we're going to be at a unique location. It won't be at a golf course or whatnot. It's going to be at a car museum. And Chef Adam will be catering that event. Councilmember Rasmussen?
Remind us of the date again on that one.
That's a great idea. Yes. What's that?
It's the 15th.
It's the 15th.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. I'm assuming an email will go out.
Sorry
on that.
I think it's the 15th. 15th or 22nd, but I want to say 15th. And it will be noticed.
It will be noticed, yes.
All right.
And you will get emails to RSVP as we get closer.
Okay.
Wait, I thought we took 15th.
Yeah, I think we took care of that last week.
It's the 15th.
That's what we need to do. We already RSVP'd.
You kind of did. Raise your hand. I said, sure.
I think we ended up with just about everybody there.
Dinner, we need to do.
Okay. And I think that's it for the agenda. We have no other business this evening. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.